Welcome to Social Justice Matters, a podcast from Social Justice Ireland. I'm Eamon Murphy, Economic and Social Analyst at Social Justice Ireland. To say the least, we're living in strange and unprecedented times. The coronavirus pandemic is arguably the greatest crisis the world has faced in living memory. It has implications for several areas of social policy, not the least of which is the economy. And it's fair to say that the global economy is in for a rough ride over the coming months, with knock-on effects for the next few years at least. And this morning I sat down, virtually of course, to chat with Dr. Tom McDonnell, co-director of the Nevin Economic Research Institute, to discuss the Irish government's economic response to COVID-19, what else might be needed to ensure a robust recovery when this pandemic subsides, and the lessons to be learned from this crisis.
So I'm here with Tom McDonnell, co-director of the Nevin Economic Research Institute, and in line with these strange and unprecedented times in which we're living, myself and Tom are conducting this discussion via Skype. But Tom, really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and have a chat with me this morning.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Eamon. Thanks for the opportunity.
Let's get straight down to business. I mean, this is an economic crisis quite unlike any other that we've experienced in living memory. I mean, talk to us about how this differs even from the financial crash of 2008-2009.
Oh, it's very, very different. The 2008-2009 crash was essentially caused by the tide going out in the financial sector and leaving a lot of companies and households with high levels of debt. Governments and households and businesses were dramatically over-leveraged, and consumption collapsed and demand collapsed across the world as a result. This time, although it's a little bit closer to the 1970s crisis, which was a supply side shock with input prices dramatically increasing in short order, this is different even from that because this is a self-imposed supply side shock. Essentially, as value chains around the world have become broken and distorted, and in Ireland and indeed a lot of other countries around the world now, we are willingly choosing to actually shut down the parts of the economy for a period of potentially up to 3 months. It could even be longer. So effectively, that's a supply side shock. So you have hundreds of thousands of workers, millions worldwide, that are now willingly not working because of government decisions. This will obviously have a knock-on effect on demand, so consumption will collapse to a large extent. So that means the response of government has to be very different from what we've seen in previous crises. A standard fiscal stimulus of, you know, increased infrastructure spending, cut taxes and so on, won't be effective here. But the problem is that people aren't buying anything, aren't going out, aren't working, aren't producing. A lot of interrelated problems. So what we need to do here is we need to actually essentially put the economy into deep freeze for a few months so that we can take it out again with minimal damage in June or July so that the economy doesn't rot. That means essentially keeping the relationship between employers and employees to the greatest extent possible and saving as many businesses as we can by effectively subsidizing their expenditure for a period of 3 to 4 months to account for the fact that their income has collapsed over that period. Ultimately, this will be very expensive for governments in terms of an increase in debt ratios. Obviously, fiscal balances and the like will go dramatically into the red, into negative territory. GDP will collapse in the second quarter and has already been falling in the first. And that's okay, because that's the right thing to do. We have to look at the healthcare crisis first. We have to look at people's lives. So with all that being taken as necessity, with the ECB behind European governments, borrowing costs can be kept very, very low, and businesses and households and people can come out of this on the other side with a minimal amount of damage. So in many respects, it's a completely different crisis to the 2008-2009 one. If mishandled, it could be the worst economic crisis since the 1930s. But if handled well, it could end up being a V-shaped recovery, by which we mean that the economy could start ticking along again in the summer and autumn. Obviously, the virus may come back again in the winter, but at least we'll have put into place the institutional architecture that will allow us to very, very quickly respond and put the economy into deep freeze again.
Economics 101 would suggest that when consumption is collapsing, that and investment, of course, will collapse as well, that government spending is needed to smooth it out. But it's not really as simple as that, is it? If this is what you call a supply-side shock, then we need a very different kind of response, not just economic stimulus, but of course, measures that are going to, I think the term cocooning has been used. You use the term to put the economy into deep freeze. What we need to do is sort of maintain a connection between employees and their firms, for example, and to make sure to the greatest extent possible that firms at the point of recovery are in a position to get back to what they were doing pre-pandemic. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's an excellent assessment. That's essentially basically what I'm calling for. And I suppose to emphasize that the vast majority of recessions are essentially cyclical phenomena. They're demand. There's a collapse in demand, usually in the private sector. And then the standard response is that governments and central banks respond by loosening monetary policy, i.e. reducing interest rates or providing funding to firms, or on the fiscal side by increasing government spending and cutting taxes and the like. However, this isn't a demand-side crisis, and central banks and governments cannot use their regular set of tools to resolve this crisis, at least in quite the same way. So in terms of monetary policy, rather than cutting interest rates, what you do is you provide unlimited access to funding for governments at low cost. And then government doesn't respond in the usual way by increasing government spending or cutting taxes. It responds by actually essentially paying for the expenditure of businesses and indeed households for a period of time. So it's a very different response. In a sense, we're kind of making this up as we go along. It's all theoretical at this point because we have literally never had a crisis like this before. It is, however, different from the 1970s. In the 1970s, there was almost nothing that governments could do because it was simply an increase in the cost of the most important input into the economy, i.e. oil. This is different, though. This is putting it into deep freeze and looking to take it out again of its cocoon in a few months' time and protecting the productive capacity. This is why we talk about the supply side. Protecting the productive capacity, making sure that workers are able to return to their jobs, that those businesses still exist. If that doesn't happen, there will be chaos when we come back in June and July. A lot of those employees will have lost their jobs permanently. Those entrepreneurs and business owners, their businesses simply won't exist again. They'll have to rebuild them from scratch. So that's why we need a very, very different response. And the package announced on Tuesday, the 24th of March, by the government of a 70% wage compensation paid to employers is a very important step. It's certainly not as generous as we've seen in other countries, but it is a very important step and the first really significant step in giving confidence that the economy will be able to recover somewhat in the later part of the summer.
And in relation to that government response, you mentioned there the 70% subsidy towards take-home pay. I think it's up to a weekly maximum of €410. There's also been an emergency unemployment payment, a COVID-19 unemployment payment of €350 a week, which government reckons will cover 75% of the take-home pay or the average take-home pay of the industries most affected, those in hospitality and what have you. I mean, how would you rate the government's response thus far from an economic point of view?
It's certainly a strategy that I was pushing for last week. I think it's broadly sound in terms of the direction. I think that the 70% could have been higher. There's obviously concerns about whether employers may seek to abuse the scheme. But in many cases, I think it's important not to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Yes, I would have liked a higher level of wage compensation, more along the lines of the 80% proposed in the UK, although their own model was flawed because it didn't take care of self-employed people, for example. And we know that certainly in the last quarter of 2019, there was 1/3 of a million people self-employed in Ireland, and they obviously wouldn't have been able to They wouldn't have been able to survive properly on €203 a month. And of course, a related point to that is it shows the insufficiency of social protection generally in Ireland. But increasing it to 350 is an important step. It is only for 12 weeks, we hope, and we hope that most self-employed will be able to go back to what they were doing in June, if not May. So I think €350 is reasonable, I think these are important steps that the government have taken belatedly, but they have taken them.
Okay, and Tom, what do you think are the long-term implications then for Ireland's welfare state? I mean, are there lessons to be learned about the inadequacies of the structures and the infrastructure that we have in place at the moment? And that can relate even to not just to public services, but even to the welfare payments. I just you mentioned there that this crisis has sort of highlighted the inadequacy of the basic welfare payment that we have in Ireland at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. We still have very high deprivation rates in this country and the insufficiency of welfare payments. And indeed, employment supports that are there is being highlighted again in this crisis, because immediately once this crisis happens, people go, no, €203 is not enough to live on. Well, okay. Then it was never enough to live on. So in terms of social protection, it is clear that welfare payments are not sufficient. Also, the weaknesses of our healthcare system are not in terms of the actual people working there who have done an incredible job, but just the inefficiencies and the inconsistencies that we have in terms of not having a universal healthcare system, of having a two-tier system. The sheer unfairness of people being able to jump queues, again, is being highlighted here. It just shows how it is fairer and better to have a single-tier healthcare system. And I hope that one of the lessons that comes out of this will be over the next decade that we will move to a single-tier healthcare system permanently. I mean, we effectively have done that for the next 12 weeks. The private hospitals will become public hospitals. But long-term, we need to ensure that there are no more private hospitals in Ireland, and we move to a completely public model. Also, I fear that one of the things that will happen during this crisis is that certain groups may be abandoned or will perhaps move off the radar. You would worry about people in direct provision. You would worry if homeless people are being adequately cared for at this time. Also, just looking at housing policy, the crisis has immediately laid bare some of the obvious flaws in the existing system. Now, of course, some of the new properties available to rent in Dublin, for example, are to do with the fact that all the students have gone back home. But it is partially a problem of regulation. Why are we allowing so many people to be Airbnb properties when we have a housing crisis in Dublin? So there are a number of policy failures, that are being highlighted just in the first week of this crisis. And I think there'll be a lot of lessons that we can kind of take away in terms of how we can improve the welfare state and move towards a system of universal basic services. I think people will find it attractive, and I think it's unlikely we will go back to business as usual as it was before. Another thing to bear in mind is that governments are bailing out the private sector for the second time in a dozen years. This time, of course, it's not the private sector's fault. But given that the state is effectively giving this largesse to firms, and I'm not just talking about the wage compensation, but there will be bailouts of business over the next few months, I'm sure, for example, in areas like the airline sector and so forth. Governments need to make sure that we take equity stakes in those companies to reflect the investments that we've made. And if government does that, and we are taking equity stakes in businesses across the economy, and again, I'm not just talking about Ireland here, but across the global economy, if businesses look for bailouts in the bad time, then they should expect to reward government and the state in the good time. And that could lead to a greater role for the state across the economy if it's handled well. So we could be looking at quite a transformed economy depending on the decisions policymakers make.
I think that's a fair comment. And you would hope that with whatever lessons we learn from this crisis, that there won't be a return to business as usual. I mean, do you find it interesting that as a result of this crisis, the government has been able to all of a sudden, at least temporarily, create that single tier health system that both the Nevin Institute and Social Justice Ireland have been campaigning for? They've managed to bring in a situation where evictions have been effectively, there's a moratorium on them. There's going to be a rent freeze for the next few months. I mean, these were things that until reasonably recently, a lot of the major political parties were saying would be unconstitutional. And it just goes to show that in a time when needs must, they will find a way.
That's right. I mean, again, it really highlights the fact that essentially these things have all along just been policy choices, that they're not necessities, they're not economic inevitabilities, that they simply reflect political economy and interest groups ensuring that the status quo maintains and that there are no fundamental improvements. I mean, we saw the NHS in the United Kingdom came out of the horror of World War II. We didn't get an NHS in the Republic of Ireland because of the way the system evolved. And of course, it came out of the churches originally. And we didn't have a kind of a big bang moment like in the UK, where we reformed an entire pillar of the welfare state. But this could be that moment. This could be that moment where we actually realize that, well, look, why persist with this inequitable and inefficient two-tier system in healthcare, and why not just move towards universal basic services for all essential commodities and services in the economy? Obviously, I'm not talking about necessarily food production or hairdressing or whatever it might be, but for things like education, healthcare, even to a certain extent housing, there just needs to be a much more significant role for the state in those areas.
And you mentioned earlier the role of the European Central Bank in essentially to keep borrowing costs low at this time. I mean, as regards other monetary authorities that will need to act as lenders of last resort in this, how do you see that taking shape? And does the NTMA, for example, have a role in this in providing short-term cheap money for the government?
Well, potentially. I mean, the NTMA, the National Treasury Management Agency, which manages the government's debt, has, I checked, 25, 26 billion of cash reserves. They will have to roll over about two-thirds of that in government bonds this year, but even so, that leaves a fairly healthy cash pile that the government has at the moment. So that's more than enough to pay for the once-off costs in terms of the sick pay, the wage compensation, the COVID payment, on all of that, which are once-off costs, can be paid for through our existing cash reserves. But looking across Europe, we will be needing to rebuild economies. I'm thinking about places like Italy and Spain, for example. Those countries, particularly Italy, already has very high levels of government debt. So ultimately, the agency responsible for monetary policy in the euro area, which is the European Central Bank, needs to do as Draghi did and say, we will do whatever it takes to protect the euro area, to protect governments. And that means keeping borrowing costs as close to zero as needs be. That means effectively, ECB, whether directly through just pumping money into governments directly or just giving them a lending line, or indirectly through the secondary bond market, needs to ensure that it is a de facto lender of last resort in the same way that the Fed is for the United States and the Treasury and that the Bank of England, rather, is in the United Kingdom. That is absolutely crucial. Governments need to know that they can borrow as much money as they need for close to 0% interest rates so that they can become the income source of last resort for households and businesses up and down the euro area to basically fund them through this three-month period and indeed fund them through the recovery in the second half of the year. Because one of the ways that we will be able to recover is by engaging in a massive program of infrastructure spending in the second half of the year. So that means construction on housing, but also in terms of rebuilding a new economy, which is much greener than it was before. So increased spending on public transport, retrofitting of houses, building of houses, everything like that. So the ECB is the anchor that needs to be doing its job to make sure that everything works across the 19 countries of the euro area. Similarly, in the United States, the United Kingdom, and in other countries, they need their lender of last resort to be keeping bond prices as low as possible. So borrowing costs for government as cheap as possible so that governments can effectively bail out the rest of the economy, allowing us to recover in the second half of the year.
And it's probably fair to say that we need to put to the side, temporarily at least, any concerns about debt to GDP ratios. Well, actually, Ireland's debt to GDP ratio doesn't look particularly bad. I think when you look at it from the perspective of a more realistic measure of our national income, it looks less healthy. But this can't be the short to medium term concern right now, can it?
No, not at all. And you're right to look at debt to output is obviously a very important metric. But also important is the actual debt interest cost. And if we can keep borrowing costs below 1%, let's say, then the actual debt interest costs will remain eminently manageable. And let's think about the alternative scenario. We just allow the economy to collapse. Well, then GDP collapses and your debt to GDP ratio increases from that perspective anyway. And then you have to pay far more every year in social protection payments. You have far less coming in terms of taxation. So we really have no choice at the moment. We have to engage in a process of doing absolutely whatever it takes on the healthcare side, first of all, to make sure that we have all the resources that we need there, and converting what aspects of the economy can convert to assist in that effective war type effort. But then secondarily, making sure that the economy can come back in the summer as undamaged as possible. And then at the third stage, engaging in a massive program of infrastructure spending in the last half or third of the year to basically get many workers whose firms have collapsed back in working and in employment as quickly as possible.
So I think the government is going to pay for this in some way or other. I mean, you mentioned there the potential medium and long term collapse in government revenue if the economy tanks. If they spend the money now, at least they'll alleviate a lot of the pain for a lot of people in the short term and give the economy a real chance of getting back on its feet much sooner. If they don't, then we're going to see a much deeper trough, and with that, a huge collapse, I think, in government revenue. So they're going to either pay for it then, or they're going to pay for the front now with cheap money.
That's exactly right. So we should be thinking of the government spending over the next 12 months as essentially an investment, no different to any other investment that one would make. We're investing in having a sustainable and productive economy after this 12-week period.
And in the US, Tom, well, Bernie Sanders' chances of securing the Democratic nomination for the presidency, speculators would say that that's all but over. But one of his key policies over the last few years has been the idea of a universal basic income. And funnily enough, as a result of this crisis, the United States, to a great extent, seems to be going down that route of basic income, or helicopter money, as some people have termed it.
That's right. And certainly helicopter money is a theoretical idea whose time has come. And I think certainly we'll see something along those lines in the United States. And we may see it in the United Kingdom. And while it seems less likely in the euro area, just because of the way the ECB operates, it's certainly not off the table now. And people like Bernanke, Draghi, I've talked about this as a concept. Hundreds of economists have signed letters to various organizations talking about something similar. So basically keeping income in the economy is very important for confidence. It's very important for consumption. People can still buy things. People still need to buy things, even if it's only online. And many businesses, even though they might have their doors shut, they can still trade online, and people can commit to buying things in June, July, and people and businesses rather will see that as orders going forward, which will also give them comfort in terms of surviving. So it really is a question of how we get money in people's hands and how we protect people during this period. And really, all the helicopter money is essentially cutting out the middleman, cutting out the stage of government, cutting out the stage of banks and so on, and just giving the money directly to households. It's also likely to be much more equitable than standard monetary policy, which usually has the effect of pushing up asset prices, which improves corporates' balances, which tends to, you know, trickle down, as it were, to the rest of the economy. Helicopter money essentially would give the same amount of money to every household or every person over 18 in the state. That obviously has a much more transformative impact on low-income households and those households that are closest to experiencing deprivation or poverty, or indeed are already experiencing deprivation and poverty. It's also a very important backstop at this very worrying time where people might be worrying about the ability to pay bills over the next week or two, for example, or even over the next month or two. So a once-off helicopter payment would allow them to pay those debts. In many ways, it would be a preferable policy to postponing rent or mortgage payments, because that creates downstream problems for other businesses and households. If you actually had helicopter money that would enable people to just pay off those debts, it would probably be a cleaner way to proceed. Obviously, it's only in a crisis that you tend to see these types of ideas considered, but it may become necessary, and certainly wouldn't be something I would be against.
Tom, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. I really appreciate it. Just before we conclude, you spoke to Brian Dobson on Morning Ireland last Friday, and you concluded your chat with him with the comment that I think really sums this up. You said, "Let's not allow this temporary supply shock to turn into a permanent demand crisis." How confident are you that we can manage that?
I'm very confident that we can manage that. We are going to see job losses on the scale of hundreds of thousands over the next 2 to 3 weeks. It took us 5 years to experience that level of job losses during the financial crisis. However, if we manage this properly, we can restore most of those jobs by the end of the summer. We have the firepower now that we did not have in 2008. So if this crisis is managed properly, not just in Ireland, but internationally, I'm talking about on the economic side, then we can have a much, much sharper recovery than we had last time. So it will be possible to basically not turn this supply-side crisis into a demand-side crisis. But government will need to react. There's going to have to be a major stimulus across the euro area in the second half of this year. And in the meantime, governments will have to become income sources of last resort. But there is hope.
Well, at least we can finish off on a positive note then. Tom, thanks very much for that.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. Social Justice Ireland will be publishing regular articles on aspects of the current crisis on our website, socialjustice.ie, so be sure to check in on a regular basis as we present ideas for what can be done in the immediate term and how this crisis might lead to positive changes for how we structure our society. In the meantime, stay safe.